Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I saw him play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
All right, ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another edition of The Standard is the Standard, the BehindTheSteelCurtain.com flagship podcast. I'm editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, Jeff Hartman, and join with me this week, not Lance Williams from the West Coast, Christopher Carter. How's it going tonight, Chris?
Doing just great. Just making space for that turkey tomorrow, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, tomorrow we want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. Hope everyone is safe if you're traveling. Tonight, I don't know if you knew this, Chris, tonight is the biggest party night
yep.
of the calendar year. I didn't know that. It was a couple years ago. Yeah, and And how am I partying? Well, I'm talking to you on the podcast, so that tells you what kind of life I live. But anyways, let's get to some football talk. Before we get into the Steelers, and before we talk about Thanksgiving Day games and all that stuff that comes with that great holiday of Thanksgiving, if you want to call in, you're more than welcome to 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. If you're like me and have kids and you don't party anymore, join us. Talk about some Steelers. But, you know, let's talk about this slate of games coming up tomorrow on Thanksgiving. And I've got a major beef with this slate of games for the second straight year, Chris. And the beef is, for the second consecutive year, there is not one AFC team in the that's on the slate of games. From the 1
really?
O'clock, the 4 o'clock, to the 8 o'clock, the second straight year. So I think the first game is just all NFC. So for as everyone that's listening to this show, most likely that's a fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you're looking at the AFC playoff race, you're wondering, okay, I want to sit down and watch some football, and I want it to have meaning for the Steelers somehow. Nope, not going to get that because it's all NFC, and that kind of pisses me off. I feel like the NFL should look at that and be like, okay, let's mix at least one AFC team in there. And they didn't do it. Second straight year, Chris. Did you realize that?
No, I didn't even pay attention to it last year when it didn't happen. The last time I remember an AFC team was when we were playing the Ravens on Thanksgiving. And that was, what, 2 years ago? Sheesh.
Yeah, that was 2013. That was the last time when the Steelers went to the M&T Bank Stadium and lost that heartbreaking game. What a weird game that was with the drop two-point conversion by Emmanuel Sanders, Mike Tomlin stepping on the field with a Jacoby Jones return. It's just very, very strange. I don't want to talk about that. I really don't. The Steelers don't have very good memories from Thanksgiving. I think they've played in the game four times maybe. One of those times was way back in the day before they had even won a Super Bowl. And then the most recent was 2013. But then prior to that, and this is going to be a throwback Thursday, it's going to be running on the site tomorrow that I did, was the 1998 game in Detroit. I call it Phil Luckett, the Phil Luckett game, and it was the game that Phil Luckett, who was the official, that botched the Jerome Bettis coin toss, that he ruined my Thanksgiving. He ruined my Thanksgiving. That Phil Luckett ruined my Thanksgiving in 1998. I was a freshman in high school, and I'm sure I was not the only one. Do you remember that game, and do you remember your reaction when it happened?
I was watching it live because Charlie Batch was quarterbacking the Lions, and he got utterly destroyed by Orpheus Roy on a play. I remember watching that game. I remember being mad. And, you know, this is my conspiracy theorist. That ruined our season. We were doing well up until that game. And then we lost that game. And then it was just a straight downhill from there. I think the team finished 7-9 that season. Ugh, 98.
Yeah.
Sucks.
they didn't win another game that year. It's hard to believe that game, and it was a game where people forget that the overtime rules have changed. They awarded Detroit the football. They drove down. Pittsburgh didn't even touch the ball in overtime, all because of Phil Luckett. Man, what a jerk. Anyways, you can check out that Throwback Thursday tomorrow on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. But let's talk a little bit about the Pittsburgh Steelers 2015 team. The Steelers are coming off a bye week. And I tell you what, if there's a team that has some momentum behind them, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the biggest reason why, the team is finally healthy. Mike Tomlin had his weekly press conference on Tuesday, and he only mentioned one injury, and that was Matt Space's knee injury was the only injury they were monitoring as they progressed out of the bye week. And now today, Brandon Boykin was limited with an ankle. This team is as healthy as they're going to be. Yeah, you're missing Marquise Pouncey. You're missing Le'Veon Bell. I get that. But outside of those long-term injuries, this is as healthy as this team's going to get, Chris. What does that mean for you as this team moves into the last six games of the regular season?
Right now, it just means please don't let anything else happen to us. I'm excited to see that they're getting healthy and that, Ryan Shazier and Martavis Bryant weren't a serious injury case. It was probably just making sure that they were doing something and making sure that they were taking all precautions. But I think it's huge because we still – the Steelers never got to see a game where they had Marquise Pouncey, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and Ben Roethlisberger all in the game. They never even had a full game with Bell, Brown, and Ben in there just by themselves. But having Brown, Bryant, and Ben in there, along with D'Angelo Williams, having a defense that is healthy, I think that could end up going a long ways. And I think that'll be a huge thing right now, and something that I'm working on as far as like just building my own up ideas and ways to illustrate this. But I think the Steelers are the perfect storm for a playoff run with the way that they're building themselves, with the way that their defense is improving all the time, and especially with now their offense is going to get a healthy Ben back and the way that everything's set up. But we'll get more into that in a bit. But yeah, I'm excited because I think that the Steelers are going to get hot right at the right time, and the playoffs are going to be so fun to watch for Pittsburgh fans.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. The playoffs are right on the cusp of right there on the edge. Six games, the Pittsburgh Steelers have a one game cushion for the postseason berth, and the phone lines are open if you want to call in. You can, 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. And if you're on hold for a little bit, we're going to get to you. We got to find the right time. We'll get to you. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, again, are in the number five spot in the AFC playoff picture. They are looking at a one-game cushion between them and the rest of the 5-5 team. And they're in a good spot right now. And it just goes to show this upcoming game against the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle, Week 12, if they can somehow find a way to win this game, if they can somehow get a victory on the road, on the West Coast, and sweep the NFC West, it's going to put them at 7-4. And depending on how some other games pan out, this game could be huge in terms of their playoff positioning. You lose this game, you leave the door open for some other teams. You win this game, and you might be slamming it shut. We have a first caller, our Hall of Fame caller, Vito from New Jersey. What's up, Vito? How's it going?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Good to be back, Vito.
Good to
Happy
be
Thanksgiving
back.
To you.
Happy Thanksgiving, man.
How do you like the Steelers' chances this Sunday?
I love them.
Well, we're going to talk about that at length during the show, Vito, but I don't know what it is. Call it a gut feeling, but I think that this offense is ready to just explode. And I think that against Seattle, you want a team that's going to get their attention. The Pittsburgh has played down to their opponents under Mike Tomlin for years. And if you look at a game like the Cleveland Browns game and you think to yourself, well, this is a game that they might not show up for, even though it's a division game. You have the Legion of Boom. You have the 12th man. You've got Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant versus Richard Sherman, Cam Chandler. There's some big names. These guys want to make a statement, and I think they are. I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers are just primed for a huge game. What do you think, Vito?
I don't know. I guess, they have a very good defensive line. I mean, I've been reading that they don't feel that defense is what it used to be. They don't think Sherman plays as good as he once did. I mean, what do you think? I mean, I think you know, I think Ben's going to have to be smart, of course. You know, you don't want to turn the ball over. You want, you know, maybe some runs, maybe mix it in with some play action. And, you know, I definitely could see him going out of the shotgun like he did against Cleveland. I thought that was a great game plan coming out of the shotgun, because they hardly touched him when he was out of the shotgun. And, you know, probably against these guys, he's going to have to get rid of that ball quickly. 2-3 seconds out of his hands and just make quick decisions, right?
Yeah, you're right. And I think when you talk about Richard Sherman, I'm going to be posting an article tomorrow morning about the matchup between Sherman and Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant. There's nothing saying that he's going to shadow Bryant or Brown, because let's be honest, if Sherman follows Antonio Brown, then you can expect a big game from Martavis Bryant. And that's the beauty of the Pittsburgh Steelers offense when everyone is healthy, is they have so many weapons. I think the question, like you said, is can they keep Roethlisberger upright? And the offensive line is going to have to win that game in the trenches. Will they be primarily out of the shotgun? I think that it's safe bet that they will run a lot of shotgun formation, but it does limit their offense in terms of how they run the ball. Le'Veon Bell is great running out of the shotgun. D'Angelo Williams does not look as comfortable. Chris, what do you think? What's going to be the plan of attack for the Steelers going into this game on Sunday?
Plan of attack really is going to be trying to establish a quick passing game. Take away the blitz of the Seahawks. That's their biggest weapon right now. I think that the Seahawks, we know that they have a strong pass rush despite their record. Don't let it fool you. They are still a tough team. They still have a lot of really good players on them. I think that the Steelers need to do what they do best. Spread them out. Make the Seahawks have to stop your best players, because despite their name for being the Legion of Boom, I think that Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant could be the ultimate nemesis to them. Antonio Brown is the perfect mix of a receiver's skill to tear apart Richard Sherman. And though Richard Sherman does not watch anyone in particular receiver in their system, he plays to one side of the field. I would try to line up Antonio Brown with him as much as possible, and then let Martavis Bryant run the rest of their secondary all across the field. Richard Sherman will not be able to stick with Antonio Brown, and their only hope of stopping Martavis Bryant is if they devote two guys to cover him. I think Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor are two exciting safeties, but let them try to win jump balls with Martavis Bryant, or let them try to keep up with him. He's too fast. And then when you do that, you still got Heath Miller. You still got D'Angelo Williams. I think it's going to be a problem on the offensive side of the ball. Yes, there's going to be some limitations, but I'm pretty sure Ben's got some stuff in store to handle the Seattle blitz out the shotgun.
Yeah, don't forget, too, that the Steelers coming off a bye is important. Not only are they getting healthy, but they've had an extra week of preparation. Roethlisberger admitted well before, right after the Cleveland game, that he had already started watching film on Seattle. You know, they watched their game against the San Francisco 49ers last week. And let's be honest, Blaine Gabbert moved the ball on the Seattle defense. They just weren't able to cash in. So the red zone offense for the Steelers is going to be huge. Anything else, Vito, before we let you go?
Yeah, I guess one of the other things that is going to be important in this game is, like you said, one of the big problems that they have in some of their games is they get to red zone and they can't capitalize. I mean, was it in the Browns game or was it the game before that? I think it was the Browns game where they went for it on 4th and 1 and came away empty. No score, no nothing. And then if I'm not mistaken, I think there was a penalty that one of the passes went through, which gave them an extra set of downs or an extra down, and they still came away empty. So that's been a lingering problem in some of the games, which I think they got to fix. I mean, you can't go in against good defenses and not be able to put up 7 on the board. You got to do your best to maybe change up some things and get in there and score that 7. I mean, I think that's going to be the key to, you know, scare the other team. If they're only coming away with field goals every time they get down there, I don't know if that's going to be enough.
Do I
think Seattle's a high-scoring team? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Russell Wilson, you know, is the type of guy that's going to throw it 30, 40 times. You know, he's probably more of a scrambler. I mean, yes, he will throw it sometimes down the field, but like they were saying, do they have, we have on offense? I don't think they're as good, to be honest with you. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, but you know what, Vito, that you were going to have a good point about the red zone, and the Steelers are going to have to perform better in the red zone. It was the Cleveland game where they struggled And I think that people have to remember is that Ben Roethlisberger, started the year at all hands on deck. They look good. He gets hurt, goes out, comes back, gets hurt again. No one expected him to play against the Browns. He comes in, obviously throws for over 370 yards and three touchdowns. I think the bye week, again, this was one of the few times that I can remember a bye week being as perfectly timed as this one. I think the Steelers used that extra bit of time. He, Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown, Heath Miller, and even D'Angelo Williams, I'm sure they all got on the same page. I think you'll see some wrinkles in the red zone. I hope it's not the Todd Haley reverse pass Antonio Brown wrinkle that you've seen against New England. But at the same time, I think hopefully you see some different routes. You see some running. You see some different changes, a change of pace. You know, they've got to do something. They've got to mix it up because against a defense like the Seattle Seahawks on the road, you have those long time-consuming drives. They have to equate in touchdowns, not field goals, because if you saw anything about the Seattle Seahawks the last 2 weeks, they are a quick-hitting offense. They don't have the big playmakers that the Steelers do, but they can score quickly. Chris, what are your thoughts on the red zone and how the Steelers can maybe fix it?
I think the Steelers are going to be fine in the red zone. Ben Roethlisberger is now healthy. One thing we got to remember is last week, there were a lot of complications with the game. And even with the one stop on fourth down that they had at the goal line, that was sort of like we lost that, because then they came right back down and shoved it down Cleveland's throat after they got stopped at the goal line, because then the defense forced a quick three and out. They got the ball back, and then it was a touchdown for the Steelers. I think that against the Seahawks, their offensive line is going to have to win some more battles. But one thing that the Steelers really should do, and they've done at certain points this season, spread Seattle out, take away their advantage of trying to beat you inside the box, and make those super secondary players that they always highly tout have to beat you. Carson Palmer tore these guys a new one a few weeks ago in primetime football in their house. This was with the 12s or whatever they call themselves, in their loud stadium. I think that to beat them, you're going to have to spread them out. Force Richard Sherman, if you really think that you're the best in the league, you're better than Darrelle Revis ever was, you better prove it, because Antonio Brown's coming to take your lunch, and I think that's what's going to happen. Put those guys in all and make them make one-on-one plays and take advantage of some of your playmakers. I think that's the best way to solve the red zone problem against the Seahawks.
Absolutely. Dito, as always, we thank you for the phone call. Have a happy Thanksgiving, my friend, and we'll talk to you, I'm sure, after the game on Sunday in the post-game show. We have another caller here. Let's see if we can get this individual on the air. 646-355, you're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Bryce. How you doing tonight?
All right,
hey,
good,
Bryce,
man.
How's
it going?
It's going well. So I just wanted to make 2 points. One, first about the defense, then the second about the offense. Defensively, I think traditionally this is a game that plays right into the Steelers' hands, because Seattle likes to run the football. I believe they're the number one ranked rushing offense. Rawls is the guy that likes to get downhill, run hard, and I think that plays right into our hands in terms of being able to get Steve McClendon on the field in base. Hopefully they run a lot of two tight end stuff, and we can get Steve McClendon in there, because he really is disruptive. Particularly, I think he'll be disruptive against that offensive line. I think when he's in the football game, they only give up 2.9 yards a carry, so that plays right into our hands. I think this is a game that Pittsburgh can really control the line of scrimmage on the defensive end. What do you think?
I agree with you, and don't leave out Dan McCullers, too. I mean, he's been a player that has come in when they run primarily their base defense that you mentioned, and he's that guy that plugs up at least two blockers every time he's on the field, and that frees up players like Stephon Tuitt, like Cam Hayward, to go out there and make plays, and because of that, I think that you're exactly right that this plays in their hands. Now, people look at Marshawn Lynch not being in this game and they want to celebrate. Well, look at who's been playing behind him. That's Thomas Rawls, who's been doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
He rushed over 200 yards. He's a great player. He's also a rookie. And so you look at a rookie, typically they have big games. They also have some duds. And I think the Steelers, they're holding opponents to 93 yards on the ground a game. And I think that their defensive run-stopping ability is better than 93 yards. I think they've had a couple games. You think back to the Baltimore Ravens game over this year, they gave up over 170 yards. That's going to really inflate those yards. So, Chris, what do you think about the run defense going against Seattle?
I think the run defense is going to have a serious challenge. Thomas Rawls seems to run very hard. In fact, we're going to be talking about him later. But Rawls is a hard runner. It's going to be a challenge to keep him. But one thing I think the Steelers have on their side, Seattle's offensive line has been in past years. They had to let a lot of them go to keep Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, and all the superstars they try to get, and they still can't keep Cam Chancellor. Jimmy Graham is not a great blocking tight end. I think that's going to come back to bite him in this game. And I really think this is a great opportunity for the front seven of the Steelers to really take over a game and just be complete menaces for Russell Wilson and Thomas Rawls. It's going to be, I think, a long game for the Seahawks offense, simply because I think that Steve McClendon, Cameron Hayward, and Stephon Tuitt are going to be major problems. And Bryce wanted to talk about the D-line coming into this game. I think that they're going to be some stalwart heroes in this game, as well as our linebackers who are just going to be flying all over the place. People are going to be talking about how we defeat the Seahawks, and part of it's going to be shutting down every part of their offense with our front seven. So I'm excited to see how the Steelers do against this offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, Steve McClendon is so underrated. The guy is really, really disruptive. He's strong. He's great with his hands. And the numbers show it again. Pittsburgh averaging 2.9 yards a carry against them. That's a great average. And I think he's going to give the Seattle offensive line a lot of problems if they're going to go base. This is a team you want to get in nickel because, A, we got the pass rushing defensive ends this year. As you know, that can really get up the field. But, B, their offensive line doesn't pass block very well. And I think that's going to lead to a lot of opportunities for the D-line to really get penetration and really make life hard for Russell Wilson.
The D-line's got to win their one-on-one matchups. When the Steelers' defense is clicking on all cylinders, they're not having to blitz a ridiculous amount of players on any given down. And you know Butler likes that backside pressure from cornerbacks to safeties, and that's great. But any time that they want to rush, you commit 5, 6, 7 players to the rush, it doesn't end well. So I think if they can get pressure from their front four, I think that they have a good chance of stopping the Seattle offense, to be honest with you. Chris, what are your thoughts on the defensive approach? I think that we talked about a lot. If there was one wild card defensive player for the Steelers, the caller Bryce brought up, McClendon, who are you picking out to say, you know, this is a guy that can make plays, this is a guy that in this game could be a difference maker? Who is that guy?
To be honest, I'm not even going to go with the defensive lineman. I'm going to go with Bud Dupree, because I think one of the biggest keys to stopping the Seahawks will be similar to what they did to contain Colin Kaepernick, and that's to keep Russell Wilson in the pocket. The Seahawks, they know that their offensive line isn't good, so they rely on a lot of option plays and out of pistol formation and ways to try and trick your linebackers and your secondary into where they might go. But the way to beat that is to stay in your lanes, remain disciplined. The outside linebackers are going to have a tall task of making sure they set the edge and come in and wreck shop. Russell Wilson is a very bad man when you give him open lanes and you don't contain him. What I think that the Steelers have been doing a lot better this year than they have in several past years is that they set the edge, and one thing we talked about after the Browns game, they are turning runners back into the inside. They're engaging with their inside shoulder and keeping their outside shoulder free, and they also have other linebackers and defensive players filling in the lane. Gap responsibility will be the key, and I think Bud Dupree is one of those guys that's going to help establish set the edge and even probably create some problems for Wilson in the backfield. Bud Dupree is explosive. I think that's going to lead to some sacks, maybe a 2-sack game for him in this one. But I'm looking at Bud Dupree as my guy that I'm talking about, my X factor in this game.
Very good, Bryce. Anything else before we let you go, buddy?
Yeah, just offensively, moving to the offense, I know we're talking a lot about Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant, and rightly so. I mean, they're going to be great. But I think what's not been talked about is Darius Heyward-Bey and Marcus Wheaton. I think this is a game where they can have a lot of targets and really do a lot of damage, hopefully over the middle for Wheaton, and then Heyward-Bey being another deep guy. I don't know if Seattle's even deep enough to stay with those guys. They've been productive when they've been given the opportunity. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that you look at the third wide receiver / Keith Miller, even maybe even more so, could be that X factor for the offense. I think the Steelers, honestly, you know, we're just all the players you named, they're all receivers, and obviously Roethlisberger if the Steelers want to really control this game, they've got to run the football. They've got to stay balanced. They've got to keep D'Angelo Williams going, and maybe even spell him. It'll be interesting to see the inactive list on Sunday to see if it's Jordan Todman or Isaiah Pete might get a helmet for the first time as a Pittsburgh Steeler. But you're right. That third, fourth option, I'm going to throw Heath Miller in there because he's going to be in there a lot. And we know that Roethlisberger likes to find him, especially on third down. I think those two players could very well be the difference maker for the Steelers offense. Chris, what do you think?
Absolutely. One thing I think the Steelers aren't short on are people that can make plays, you know, after Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant. Heath Miller is a solid option. I think he's going to get several looks today, or not today, on Sunday. But Marcus Wheaton is such an underrated receiver because the Steelers haven't had to go to him that much this season. He's fast. He's quick. He can catch a ball. Is he great? You know, I wouldn't say that. Is he really, really good? We don't know because he hasn't had the opportunity to shine. But when he gets the opportunity, he usually takes it. And I think that he can be a problem to cover. But the thing is, Ben, it's like he doesn't need Wheaton to get open because Antonio Brown's always open because no one can cover the man. And I think that, you know, whereas Wheaton and Hayward Bay are definitely factors and they're going to be problems that Seattle will have to compensate for, I'm not so sure that they're going to be able to shut down Antonio Brown and that Ben's going to need to even go to them that much. I think that Hayward Bay will have some good plays. I think that Wheaton might get a few good catches and maybe even score a bit. But the story of the game is going to be, can they shut down the outside guys? Then we can talk about Heath Miller and Marcus Wheaton and Darius Hayward Bay. But, you know, the Seahawks, if they don't even get to that part of the question, if they don't cover and shut down Antonio Brown and take away Martavis Bryant on the under routes and the deep routes, it's good night. It's good night, Irene. I mean, there's going to be no chance for them to try and keep up with the pace of the Steelers' offense. So I think that there's credibility saying there, but they're going to have to stop the two biggest weapons in the offense right now first.
Yeah, and one more thing, guys, defensively to keep in mind, we know we've had the problems with tight ends, so we got to keep Jimmy Graham under lock. But just like last year when we kept him on lock, when he played for the Saints, you got to cover Tyler Lockett. You don't want him to beat the Eagles this year and just kill us. So those two guys you got to pay attention to. You don't want them keeping third downs going and letting them guys get into a rhythm.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more, Bryce. Hey, thanks for the phone call. Have a happy Thanksgiving, my friend, and we'll talk to you on Sunday probably.
Yeah, you too, guys. Have a good holiday. Talk to you then.
You too.
All right. Man, I'll tell you what, this is a big game coming up. I hope the fans feel it. I know I feel it. I know you feel it, Chris. And we've got a lot of callers calling in that are anxious to talk about the upcoming game. We got another Chris. Chris, this time from North Carolina, wants to talk about the Steelers and Seahawks. Chris, you're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead. What's your question?
Hey guys, how y'all doing? I want to get y'all's opinion. And I want to see what y'all think about this being a high scoring game between the Steelers and the Seahawks.
Well, you know, I got to be honest. I definitely think that this could be. It kind of reminds me of a game similar to the Cincinnati Bengals Pittsburgh Steelers game. I want to say it was Week 8 in Heinz Field. Everyone predicted a shootout, and it turned out to be a 16-10. Final. I think that was the final score. Correct me if I'm wrong. But at the same time, you just don't really know with this football team what it's going to look like. I do know Ben Roethlisberger is as healthy as he's been since prior to the knee injury. I know that Antonio Brown is there's no one better right now, and there might be an argument for other players, but that's foolish. And I think that you have a running back in D'Angelo Williams that is capable when he gets the opportunity, when he gets the lane. The question for me, I think Pittsburgh is going to be able to put up almost 30, if not more. Is Seattle going to be able to do the same on the Steelers' defense? Chris, what do you think about that? You think Seattle can put up 30 on Pittsburgh?
I don't give them much chance to. I mean, they can. Any given Sunday is something that I definitely believe in as a football fan. But take nothing away. Russell Wilson, I think, is a very, very good quarterback. As much people give him crap and they say he's overrated, and they try to take away the fact that he won the Super Bowl from him. The man's a super duper playmaker. He's not the best. He's not the best at dissecting a defense, but he can make reads, and he is insane when there's pressure on him. He dodges it and he makes it look effortless sometimes. But the thing is, if you take away their running game, which I really think the Steelers will be able to do against Seattle's offensive line, and force him, you keep him in the pocket, you force him to make throws in the tight windows, there will be opportunities to make plays. And his receivers aren't all that good. Now, he has Jimmy Graham, sure, and we've been eaten up by tight ends now and then. I think that the Steelers have been doing a good job lately of saying, hey, guys, we're not all that bad at covering tight ends. You know, you saw them against Barnage last week. You know, he didn't do much for the Browns, and he's been one of the biggest tight end fantasy producers across the board. But I think if the Seahawks are going to put up a lot of points, it will be because the Steelers did not do a good job of keeping Russell Wilson in the pocket, and that they let him run around, roam free, and then that allowed people to get open in the secondary after the initial routes were run. And I think that would be the way how we get killed, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Keith Butler's done a great job with his defense, and I think he's going to be able to bottle them up and not shut out the Seahawks, not completely take their offense away from them, but I think it's going to be like a 13-point game for their offense, and I think some of those points are going to come from, you know, late in the game when they're trying to pass a lot and they get a score because that happens against the Steelers, but I don't see them getting a lot of points. Whereas I do think that as long as Ben is okay and we don't see any other significant injuries in this game, I think that our offense can light it up on a lot of opportunities, especially when I saw the way how Carson Palmer carved them up a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that, Chris. There is a couple of things that I am worried about, though, when you look at the Steelers. The last game they played against the Browns, Browns' rush defense is pretty much no good. You know, they bottled up D'Angelo Williams, and I don't know I'm not really sure how good the Seahawks' rush defense is. I'm sure they're better than Cleveland's, but like I said, I'm kind of worried about D'Angelo Williams. But the other thing is, when you look at the Seahawks, Russell Wilson, if he can start scrambling that ball and he can get Rawls going, I feel like with Russell Wilson out there scrambling the ball, I'm worried about the Pittsburgh's defense.
Yeah, I think that the Pittsburgh's defensive approach is very clear-cut. You have to stop the run. You have to contain, keep Russell Wilson in the pocket. And that's your recipe for success right there. It's easier said than done, don't get me wrong. But I think that, you know, I do know that the Seattle Seahawks defense is averaging 98 yards on the ground, meaning giving up 98 yards on average per game, which is
correct.
Significantly less than what the Cleveland Browns are giving up. I think that the Cleveland Browns game, a lot of people were concerned about D'Angelo Williams not getting going. People have to remember that D'Angelo Williams is a guy that there's a reason why Roosevelt Nix has become more of a player on this team since Le'Veon Bell got hurt. D'Angelo Williams, he likes that lead blocker. He likes someone paving the way for him. And when Roethlisberger entered that game, they had to use primarily shotgun formations, which takes Roosevelt Nix off of the field. And when you do that, you limit your ability to run certain plays. And so I think that I kind of consider that an aberration. I think we're going to see more of the D'Angelo Williams that we're accustomed to seeing. You're going to see Ben under center more. And I think that you're going to be able to see more of a balanced attack from the Steelers and not a pass-happy attack that you saw against the Cleveland Browns. At the same time, you know, yeah, you're disappointed that they didn't run the ball against Cleveland, but at the same time, they threw for over 370 for three touchdowns. So it's hard to argue when you're putting up 30 points a game. Chris Carter, what do you think about that?
I'm on the side. Sorry, I cut you off. But I couldn't hear you for like until the very last second. What'd you say again, Jeff?
Okay. I was just wanting to know what you thought about the Steelers' offense in terms of their issues running the football against Cleveland. Do you see them running the ball better against Seattle, despite the fact that Seattle's defense is better against the run than Cleveland?
I mean, one of the issues that I think they ran up against was not being one, they lost the ability to they came into the game thinking that with Landry Jones they were going to be able to come in, use him under center, and let the offense work from a traditional running standpoint. And without Le'Veon Bell, who's really great when you put him in any situation, but especially when he has single back, he doesn't need a person in front of him. And you put D'Angelo Williams in a situation with Roosevelt Nix or Will Johnson, you give him opportunities to make plays. Against the Browns, they didn't have that. They were in the shotgun. And like you said towards the beginning of this episode, D'Angelo Williams is not as great out of the shotgun as he is, but, you know, with a lead blocker and working on things. Now, I think that against Seattle, yes, the test is going to be a little bit taller than Cleveland, but I think that they're also game planning. I think that there's also a lot more strategized into it. Todd Haley's spent the past 2 weeks, hopefully, looking at, all right, this is the Seattle defense. This is what I got to do to spring my guys open, because I do think that they can take a little bit of a more of a rushing attack against the Seahawks, particularly if they're able to use David DeCastro and Ramon Foster on some pulling plays to get lead blockers in situations when it typically wouldn't. Like we've talked before, you know how Steelers like to spread people out. Come out, put Heath Miller, you know, just behind the line of scrimmage. Let him sit there and use your double pull plays. We need to get back to those, even though they worked great for Le'Veon Bell last year and most of this year. Let D'Angelo Williams get some of those. We don't need a fullback. Let Heath Miller pull along with Dave DeCastro or Ramon Foster going the other way, and I think then you'll spring some plays. Let's see some of those, and I think they'll have some of those drawn up. Look for those double pull plays to spring up some big run plays for D'Angelo Williams.
Absolutely, and Chris from North Carolina, we thank you for the phone call. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and hopefully you call back soon. We appreciate it. Around that time of the show, callers are kind of dying down, and that's fine. If you still want to call in, you can, 347-850-851. And again, 347-850-8581. Call and be a part of the show, and we'll be glad to talk to you about anything related to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, let's get into some X's and O's now. We talk about offensive keys, defensive keys to success versus Seattle. I'm going to go first and give you the offensive keys to success. Gosh, that's a tongue twister. But anyways, I think if you've been listening to the show, if you're listening live or on podcast, you've heard a lot of the keys already been talked about from the various callers that we've had. And I think the number one, and I say this week in and week out with Lance, is they have to stay balanced. The Pittsburgh Steelers cannot afford to go on the road in a hostile environment like Seattle and expect to win a game by throwing the ball as many times as they did against Cleveland. Now, I'm gonna say that the Cleveland game was a little bit of an aberration for a lot of the reasons that I said prior to this segment of the show, but at the same time, I look at this game and say, this is a game D'Angelo Williams needs to rush for, you know, close to 100 yards. You hope that he gets over 100 all-purpose yards, but if he can rush close to 100, receive for 20, 30 yards, that's going to give them the balance they need. That's going to keep the pass rush off them. It's going to get Ben Roethlisberger time to set up play action, and that equates to big plays down the field. Now, step number two, or the number two key to success for the Steelers offense for me, as always, is protect the football. Roethlisberger, as great as he has been, has thrown some really mind-numbing interceptions since he's returned. You think about the Kansas City game, again against Cleveland, he threw another bad interception off of a turnover. You just have to protect the ball. Why did Michael Vick keep the Steelers in the game? He didn't turn the ball over. And I don't want to hear about, oh, well, he could have, should have, whatever. He didn't turn the ball over. Landry Jones and his lone start, his first start of the season against Kansas City, you turn the ball over, you're going to lose the game. For the Steelers, protect the football. Don't put it on the turf, Martavis Bryant. Keep it clean and don't turn it over, and I love their chances of winning. And lastly, red zone production is going to be paramount for the Steelers. You have to be able to turn red zone opportunities into touchdowns and not field goals. If Chris Boswell is doing nothing but kicking 33-yard point after touchdowns, then I think everyone knows what that means. And that means they're putting up six and not three. You put a team like Seattle that relies so much on their running game behind the chains, and by that I mean you're up big, you are going to get them in an uncomfortable situation. They don't want to rely on Russell Wilson to throw the ball 45 times in a game. They want Thomas Rawls to run the ball. They want him to get the majority of the carries. They want to keep play action and the run read option available to them. It's up to the Steelers offense to make sure that it doesn't remain an option based on the fact that they've scored enough points to make them one-dimensional. Those are the three keys for me. Number one, not necessarily the most important, stay balanced. Number two, don't turn the football over. And number three, red zone possessions need to equate to touchdowns, not field goals. Chris, anything to add, include, or chime in on with my three keys to offensive success?
No, I think you got it down. You're right. We cannot win with field goals. We cannot depend on Chris Boswell to win this game. Though he is the Wizard of Oz, and you know, I do like this guy so far. It's got to be in the end zone. We can't give them any opportunities on turnovers. That has been one of the biggest things early in the season that helped us get success and stay in games that were difficult for us. We didn't turn the ball over. And that was something that Michael Vick did well when he was with the Steelers, you know, or when he was starting for the Steelers when we needed him. They don't turn the ball over. They put points on the board. The offense will get the job done, and the Steelers will win this game. I think you're completely on point. If they limit the turnovers and they take their opportunities, don't make them field goals, make them touchdowns, this is going to be a really fun game to watch on the offense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, the funny thing is that Lance was not able to be on the air with us tonight, but he and I texted each other throughout the week, and he was texting me. He was watching some Seahawks film, and he was texting me the keys to victory for our offense. And attack this guy vertically, this guy that way. And you know what? The way I view the Steelers' offense this year, and maybe you call me a homer, and I am, I'll admit it, it's not about them. It's not about the defense. I honestly feel that this Steelers' offense against any defense, that includes Denver, who's going to be coming to Heinz Field in a couple weeks, the Steelers just go, I have to go out and do what they do, and they'll put points on the board. They have the playmakers to do that. And that may just be me, but in my opinion, the Seattle defense is good, but they're not to the caliber of the Pittsburgh Steelers offense if they make the plays that are presented to them. So anyways, I digress. Let's get to the defensive keys. Chris, what do you got for us on the defensive side of the football going against the Seattle offense?
All right. I'm going to test you some movie trivia right here, Jeff. What was the one thing that Lone Star was did to piss off Dark Helmet and Spaceballs in the very beginning of the movie?
He jammed his radar.
Yeah,
is that what you're talking about?
The raspberry jam. That's what I'm talking about. And that's jam Graham. They got to jam some Graham. Do not let this man get off clean off the line of scrimmage. He is extremely athletic, though he does not have the numbers this season, and he's been complaining about not getting the ball and not being as much of a receiver as he would like to be. Guess what? They will go to him if we leave him open. Now, some people like to say, oh, the Steelers like to leave tight ends open. That's what they strategize to do. No, they don't. It's just that sometimes you go up against really good players, but Jimmy Graham is one of those really good players. Put your hands on him at the line of scrimmage. Make him have to fight off the line of scrimmage. And then Russell Wilson is going to be looking around for Tyler Lockett and Doug Baldwin. And I don't know the other receivers because I really don't matter to me that much. But jamming Graham at the line of scrimmage, it will make it more difficult for him to get jump ball situations, for him to come off clean, which is really what they needed to do more to Gronkowski, in the opening weeks. And I think that will cause more problems and timing problems for Russell Wilson. He doesn't even seem to have that great of a chemistry with Graham in the first place. Take him out of the equation. That's their best receiver out of the game. So that's my first one. My second one, this is my tribute to Lance because he always makes his rhyme. Now, I don't have the rhyming skills of the great Lance that's always on our show, but I'm going to try. I'm going to, like, kind of honor him with my words. So excuse me. Cut me in. First one is, if the Steelers want to flex their muscle, they're going to have to contain Russell. And that's going to be the key to stopping the passing offense. Russell Wilson's good, can be good within the pocket, but the Steelers, especially of late, have been doing a great job running with receivers, taking away quick options. They take away those quick options against Russell Wilson and don't make his reads easy. He's going to be looking for ways to escape. You take out his ways to escape, he's going to have a lot of problems, and he's going to start to be running into his own players, running into our players. And I think that we have the guys right now, particularly Bud Dupree and, you know, Jarvis Jones at times, Ryan Shazier. I think Ryan Shazier is going to be shadowing him a lot more, a lot like he did Colin Kaepernick. And this could even be a big game like he had against the Niners. But let Ryan Shazier and Bud Dupree get after Russell Wilson and eliminate his speed, which is a huge asset for the Seahawks offense. Containing Russell is a key to it. Now, my third one, we were talking about it earlier, but I think the Steelers, if they want to show some balls, they're going to have to stop Rawls. Now, Rawls trucked. I mean, I'm going to be putting this in the next hit squad gifts that are coming out tomorrow, because we didn't get to vote on who had the biggest hits of the week from week 11. But Rawls absolutely trucked a guy last week against the Niners on the sideline. I mean, it was ugly. He just put his shoulder down. It was like a few steps away from what Adrian Peterson did to William Gay back in 2009. And I don't know if you remember that play, Jeff, but I just remember seeing that. I was like, oh, God. That was
I remember that.
It wasn't that bad, But it was close. Like, he just got this dude way up in the air, and he just took him out, and it was, dude, you didn't belong there. And he's a hard runner. He is actually their leading rusher right now, despite not having the most carries. That's Marshawn Lynch. He has 101 carries for 604 yards. He's averaging 6 yards an attempt right now, with his longest being 69 yards. But he only has 2 touchdowns. Take this guy out of the equation. Make sure that you shut down his running lanes, play gap responsibility, and I think that Steelers will do a good job. I think he's going to end up getting like 60 yards, 70 yards around there throughout this game, because the Seahawks will try to rely on their run game and establish it as to try and set up other means for their offense. But I don't think it will be I don't think he will be like a crusher against the Steelers. I do think that they'll be able to sort of put the clamps down and force other people to beat them. But if they don't, it's gonna be a really rough game for the defense, because then that's when Russell Wilson can hit you with play action, and he does. If you leave a man open, he will find him, and that's something he's done consistently. So we're just reviewing my keys. First one. Oh snap! What was my first one? I was too dope on my rhymes. Oh wait, no, it was Jam Graham.
Jam Graham.
You got a Jam Graham, and you got to contain Russell. And then you got to stop Rawls. Those are my big. And you take those three guys out of the picture for Seattle. What, you gonna beat me with Tyler Lockett? Is that what you're gonna do? I hope that's not what they're gonna do, because you know Marshawn Lynch, who's a bad man, he's not in the game. Jermaine Kearse? No, that's not. He's not the freak. No, I'm not scared of him. What, Fred Jackson? Okay, he beat us in preseason. That was about it. And Doug Baldwin. You know, whatever. These guys are decent athletes, but they run through Russell Wilson. You take him, Rawls, and Graham, and you limit their production. This offense will be stymied, and you won't see them put up 14 points.
Yeah, you're right. Now, before you go, first kudos on the rhymes. I'm sure Lance will definitely want to give you a pat on the back next week in our show. But I will say this: I am a huge Spaceballs fan. So when you ask me that, I'm very familiar with that reference, and it's just one of my favorite movies. I've never even seen a Star Wars movie, by the way. I only watched Spaceballs. But still, yeah, Raspberry. No one uses Raspberry.
Lone Star.
All right. We do have a caller. Let's get this caller on the air, see what they want to talk about. 650-996. You're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. This is Michael from California. How you guys doing?
All right, Mike, you
said. Up, Mike.
So I don't know if you guys have talked about Boykin yet, but I just had a quick question for you guys about him.
Sure, go ahead.
So, I mean, we've heard that the coaches aren't playing Boykin because they don't want to take Will Gay off the field. Obviously, Will Gay is a better slot corner than Boykin, and the coaches seem to like Blake and Cockrell on the outside over Boykin. But now, so when the Steelers are in their base defense, they have Gay and Blake on the outside. And then when they go nickel, Gay goes to the slot, and then Cockrell comes in to play outside. But the thing is,
right,
Blake isn't really playing well right now. So at least according to, you know, Pro Football Focus, which isn't always great, but it is what it is, Blake is listed as the fourth worst cornerback in the league. So that's pretty bad, and I think that he's keeping his job through big hits and pretty timely interceptions. So what if, when the Steelers go nickel, Gay actually stays on the outside with Cockrell, and then Boykin comes into the slot? I think that Gay and Cockrell on the outside and Boykin in the slot is a lot better than Blake and Cockrell on the outside and Gay in the slot. So what do you guys think about that?
I mean, to be honest with you, if the play were as bad as you're suggesting, that would be an option. I think that you're looking at William Gay, and in my opinion, he's one of the best slot cornerbacks in the AFC, not just on the Pittsburgh Steelers, not just in the AFC North. He is that good. And there's a reason why you haven't heard anything about William Gay recently, because they don't even throw his way, really. I'm not saying he's Revis or anyone like that. He just does a solid job of playing within the rules, and no one really picks on him. Well, it might have something to do with Antoine Blake being on the field. I just don't know if that's going to be a solution for the Steelers. Carnell Lake came out and said that they love William Gay in the slot, and that's why they're going to continue to move him there, because he's so good. So keeping him on the outside, you know, honestly, Brandon Boykin coming from Philadelphia, most of his film was in the slot, and he was a very, very solid slot cornerback. He's not as good as William Gay. He didn't have much film on the outside, and what they did see from the outside, I don't think they were very impressed with, and I don't think they're very impressed with him on the outside still, hence why he's not playing over someone like Antoine Blake. So now you're splitting hairs, in my opinion, with this scenario that you're giving. You know, you're taking your best spot cornerback and moving to the outside where he might not be as comfortable in multiple receiver sets, and you're putting someone else in there on the slot that might not be as good. It just seems like you're tossing a lot, and that could possibly be a resolution later. But honestly, someone that's not seeing practice, I have to trust the coach's call on this, and that the fact that in the scenario they have, Boykin's just not good enough to crack the lineup. What do you think, Chris?
I've been one of the main people that when Antoine Blake messes up, I call him for it. I put in my losers column more than once on winners and losers after the game. But at the same time, I've also given the praises of saying, like, this man did a good job when he does a good job. The reason that PFT gives him, or whatever, I'm sorry, Pro Football Focus, PFF, gives him a low rating is because he might be the highest target or one of the highest targeted cornerbacks in the league. And part of that is our system. He's not, I don't think he's really a great zone coverage quarterback. He's a guy that he's really good in a straight line. He can run. He's pretty fast with the ball in his hands, but if he sees the ball, he can break on it. But as far as, like, you know, turning and shifting and a lot of the things that the Steelers need out of their cornerback, he's not the best in the world, but he knows the system. And one thing that the Steelers corners have to be able to do in the system is hit, and he hits pretty well. He knows he seems to target the ball really well, and as much as that's not your typical what you want from a cover corner, you know, I'd take that over a guy that we're not just not sure about. I'm pretty sure that if Brandon Boykin was as good as we think he can be, or some people think he can be, he'd be playing. If he was really better than Antoine Blake, they would have put him in there after the performance he had against the Chiefs, because he looked abysmal against the Chiefs. But whatever it is, the coaches are like, no, we're going to keep Blake in there. And, you know, the speculation was early in the season that Boykin wasn't getting time because they didn't want to lose a higher draft pick to the Eagles for that trade. Well, that ship has came and gone. It has sailed. It is gone. It is not a topic of discussion. Mark Caboli put up a stat that said if Boykin played every snap from this point on, the Steelers wouldn't have to worry about that. So, really, and Carnell Lake said this, the reason he's not out there is because they're satisfied with who they have. And, frankly, I'm feeling him. You know, Raj Cockrell, I think, has done a great job and has been a remarkable free agent pickup for us. I think Antoine Blake, as an undrafted guy that we're spending dirt on to keep, he's doing what I want him to do, and he's hitting people. And then you still got our safeties. I mean, legit, Brandon Boykin, let's keep him there because, you know, these guys are playing. They're healthy. They're not having any problems. If someone gets hurt, then you throw Boykin in. Because we haven't even, like, you guys talk about Gay. I'm just talking about my two outside guys because Gay, we're not taking off the field. But, you know, let Boykin be a depth guy. We need depth. And we've seen with our luck at injuries this season that, you know, we need depth at all positions. Now, cornerback, I can't say we've been lucky because we lost Cortez Allen and Thanquez Golson before, you know, we got our feet under ourselves. But I think Boykin, I have no problem with him riding the bench. Carnell Lake is my guy, and I trust him. When he came out and said to the media that the reason that he hasn't gotten time is because they see these guys as better right now in their system, I can't argue with him. The Steelers are one of the best scoring defenses in the league, and yes, they give up plenty of yardage, but I think part of it is they're able to create turnovers, and Antoine Blake has two really good interceptions this year, one of which was returned for a touchdown and saved our butts against the San Diego Chargers. So I'm not taking him out the lineup until he's absolutely dead in the ground and, you know, he can't cover anybody. I'm not on the Boykin train of get him in the field immediately because I'm not staring at this secondary and thinking, oh my gosh, what are we going to do anymore? Maybe back in week one, but not today.
Yeah, Michael, I know that's not a clear-cut answer for your question, but, I mean, the scenario you laid out could happen, but I just don't know if it'll happen in the near future, barring injury. Anything else before we let you go?
Well, I mean, I guess I think they just like Blake's style of play a little bit more, you know, the hard hitting, you know, timely splash plays, I guess. I think they favor that a little bit more over kind of the solid player that we thought Boykin would be. So, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, as long as, you know, they're not giving up points, that's what really matters in the end.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's a shame that so far we haven't seen anything out of Brandon Boykin in terms of to gauge him on, you know, his solid play or lack thereof. So maybe we'll get to see it if there's an injury to a player above him. You hope it's not to someone like William Gay, but there's still six games left and hopefully a postseason run, so we'll see what happens. But, Michael, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and hopefully you call back again. Chris, let's talk about some predictions, okay? We're here to talk about Steelers and Seahawks. I do have Lance's prediction. It's in an envelope. It's sealed. It's been stamped. It's got everything on it. The Lance Williams official seal has been placed on it. Let me open it up here. No surprise, to be honest with you, that Lance Williams has selected the Seahawks to win this game. His
man,
score is
20.
I'm telling you, man, the guy, I don't know why, he hates the Steelers for some reason. But anyways, 24-20, he has the Seattle Seahawks being victorious, which would move the Steelers' record to 6-5, would put a huge log jam in the AFC playoff picture, would be a nightmare, if you ask me. He has them 24-20 losers on the West Coast in the Pacific Northwest against the Seahawks. Chris, what's your prediction? I know who you're going to pick to win. I'm anxious to hear your score, though.
He said 24-20. What, Lance? He's such a jokester. I think the Steelers are going to continue their streak of having 30-point games, which is right now at 2 because of the Browns and the Raiders. But I think it's going to be 31-13. This is going to be a game where we see Antonio Brown embarrass Richard Sherman. They're going to be exchanging jerseys at the end of the game because Richard Sherman's going to be like, "Hey, man, you are the man." And Richard Sherman does give it up when you beat him. I will give him that. I think Antonio Brown's going to get 2 touchdowns and like 150 yards. I think Martavis Bryant's going to have some big plays. And watch out for Heath Miller. I do think he's going to get a touchdown. They're going to hear some seats coming from Seattle. And Fortell, I do believe that there is a very strong Steelers presence on the West Coast, even the Upper West Coast, which is where we're going to with Seattle. Portland's got a lot of Steelers bars in it. There could be a lot of Steelers fans at this game, and a lot of people say, you know, the 12 this, 12 that. I don't think it's going to be a problem for Pittsburgh. I think that the whole West Coast thing, it's one of those things that I'm like, I really don't care much for it. They came out and they won against St. Louis. They won in San Diego. You know, they're gonna be fine. Although St. Louis isn't West Coast, they're Western. But I think they're gonna be fine. The offense is gonna miss a beat, and I think the defense is gonna come ready to play. And like I said, they're gonna create problems. There's gonna be some big plays they give up, but I think they're gonna create enough turnovers to make up for it. And that's why I say 31-13 Steelers.
All right, I like that score. I like that score, but I'm gonna go a step further. I see the Steelers scoring over 30 as well. I'm going to see your 31. I'm going to say they score 31. But I think that it's going to be a little bit closer than that. I'm going to say 31-24. I think that the Seattle Seahawks, I think Pittsburgh's going to jump out to an early lead. And I think Seattle's going to come storming back, maybe score some late-game touchdowns to make it interesting. But I think the Steelers win this game 31-24. I don't know why. I said this earlier in the week. Actually, it might have been on Sunday or Monday of this week on our Twitter account, that basically, I think it's a gut feeling. I feel like this team is just ready to come out with a vengeance, and it just happens to be that the Seahawks are the next team on the schedule, and I hope I'm right. I hope that they come out and just knock the piss out of this team and prove that this is a statement win for Pittsburgh. And if they win this game, they're 7-4. They're putting pressure on the Cincinnati Bengals. They're distancing themselves from the pack in the AFC playoff picture, and they're showing to everyone that they're a team that you don't want to play in the postseason. Because I'll be honest, I watched that Monday night game against Buffalo and New England. New England has so many injuries, they are unbelievably beatable. I hope the Steelers play that team again. I don't care if it's in Foxborough. I like their chances because I don't even think with the radios going out, it will stop the outcome. I'll take the Steelers in that game if that happens again. And I know I'm getting I'm going on a tangent here, but I'm telling you, man, this team's got me pumped up. They've got me pumped up. I just hope they come out on Sunday and prove that this offense and this defense are coming into their own and they're improving down the stretch, and they are going to be a nightmare if you have them on your schedule for the last on one of the last six games.
Well, Jeff, I think you just brought back one of my favorite segments that I honestly missed. You brought back some tee off right there. That was because, remember, I remember Jeff T, when he would just be teed off about something, he would just go to town on it, and I'd be like, get him, Jeff. Yeah, that's what happened. He was like, I've had enough of this mess. The Patriots, you can jam our radios, deflate your football, film our practices, film the practices of our practices, film yourself filming the practices of the practices. We still going to beat you. At the end of the day, it was funny. I read on Deadspin earlier today when I was getting off of work, Samir Kalop, I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name, but he's one of the good writers at Deadspin. He had some good days where he had some good writing, but he's a Patriots fan, and he was like, he basically wrote like a sort of an open letter to Patriots fans saying, guys, we're sketchy and we're shady as all hell. Let's just admit who we are and roll with it because I don't know if you watched much of the Monday night game, Jeff, but did you see how the officiating was really bad. You know, there were a lot of things that went on with that game that were just so bizarre, with them stopping the play before Brady even threw the ball and he wasn't out of bounds. Then, you know, the several pass interferences that were just let go. And then, of course, at the end of the game with Sammy Watkins falling out of bounds, but they say he fell inbounds and wasn't touched, but somehow that counts as inbounds and ends the game. I don't know if you saw any of that, but would you believe me if I told you that with all the bad calls that really helped the Patriots, that Patriots fans were screaming at the refs screwed them and were trying to make them lose to Buffalo?
Yeah, I didn't see the end of the game. I did see that phantom whistle with Brady. And the thing is that Brady, that play should have been blown dead. They should have redone the play. They gave them that first down pass to Amendola, even though it should have been a big gain. The rules state that if he hasn't gotten rid of the football left with an inadvertent whistle, it should have been dead. But, yeah, the Patriots fans and Boston fans in general are a real fickle bunch. And I guess every fan base is to an extent. If you have a fan base that's considered themselves rabid, and I think Pittsburgh is one of those fan bases, and you look at the Pirates, the Penguins, and the Steelers, you know, you get those diehard fans. Everyone wants to have a reason and excuse, but it does get old from Boston. And maybe it's because they've had so much success with NFL and NHL and basketball and you name it, so in baseball, even with the Red Sox. So it is interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the AFC playoff picture shakes out. Right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers are in the driver's seat. It's a great place to be. And you know what else is a great place to be is BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Coming up this week, tomorrow we're going to have the top three hits. I'm going to have a breakdown of Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant versus Richard Sherman, a very good throwback Thursday segment. The podcast will be up there. We've got a breakdown of the Seattle Seahawks pass rushers coming up. I mean, some great stuff, not to mention the fact that we're breaking down the Steelers' transition into cover two defense. We did part one today. Part two hopefully is coming tomorrow, if not tomorrow, Friday. Make sure you check out the site. A lot of good stuff on there, BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. That's your place to be for all your Pittsburgh Steelers wants and needs. For Chris and myself, we wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. We hope you're safe out there. Enjoy it, and then be sure to be ready on Sunday when the Steelers play the Seahawks. We'll see you next time, or we'll see you Sunday, actually, Chris and I will, on the Steelers Final Score post-game call-in show right after the game here on our Blog Talk Radio page. We'll see you then. Go Steelers. Bye.
Turkey.